I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And then there was only four remaining in the World Cup. Samoa head back for a rematch with England after being demolished 60-6 in their first game of the tournament. We get a chance to seek a little bit of redemption, and on the other side of the draw, old foes England and Australia advanced, as to be expected.
New Zealand and Australia.
New Zealand and Australia, sorry. Losing the plot over here, but probably no surprises. I think the one that people were more 50-50 on was obviously the Tonga-Samoa game, Boxhead, which turned out to be a pretty good game of football, but Samoa certainly turned things around from the way they started, yeah, that's for sure.
I think the games have been pretty ordinary, I've got to be honest, but the closer ones are obviously better to watch.
Mm.
That's about as complimentary I could be about some of the footy I saw on the weekend. Hopefully, we get a good contest, Australia and New Zealand. And I think England might be a little bit of fool's gold. I sort of watched their game. And, I think there's some holes that Samoa can put in them. I don't know whether Samoa can sort of identify it and do it. Obviously, I see what I see through my eyes. It doesn't mean that everyone else sees it that way, but... Yeah, I think England are fairly structured. They're a fairly structured team. So if Samoa can get out there and make it a Samoan style of a game, I think they'll cause England some problems.
Mm. And the other two games...
I think England are playing with the most enthusiasm. They look the team with the most energy.
Home World Cup.
Yeah, I get that.
Point to prove.
Well, yeah, what point to prove? Every team's got a point to prove. If you want to win it, you're there to win it. So I was surprised at how lackadaisical both Australia and New Zealand were on the weekend. That did surprise me, because I expected that come the quarters, they'd get their ass kicking shoes on, but yeah, they both fluffed around to a degree. Australia really, apart from some long shifts on their left side, didn't really construct a lot of tries. A lot of the tries were strips or just simple one-on-one missed tackles, pass back through the middle of the field, kicks. I don't know. I wasn't impressed with any side, really. It probably... Yeah, it's going to be an interesting weekend. How you line up Australia and New Zealand's form, and then what team the coaches pick, because that's probably been the biggest talking point of the World Cup, is the games that are played before the game, just in selections and some of the tactics that have been employed in terms of team structure. But
yeah, well, back to, like you said, those two results, obviously... weren't the most glowing. Both first half blowouts. Australia, I think, were 30-0. England 38-0. Both didn't go on, but the second half got fairly sloppy. And then you had the Fiji-New Zealand game, which a lot of people thought Fiji were hard done by. I sort of thought the call for the penalty beforehand, where Valame, he was pushed a little bit, but I thought Sebo just dropped that cold. I didn't think that affected it at all. So I didn't agree with that call. People talking about the strip call, like he's pushing away, he's kick out playing at the ball. Like, I think there's intent there to play to the ball, so it's a 50-50, but penalty.
Bullshit. We both agreed that wasn't a penalty.
You talking about Valame or the strip?
The strip. The one where they ruled it a strip and they kicked the penalty.
Mm.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a strip. I thought he just dropped the call.
Well, I thought the other one, same deal. I didn't think it was a penalty. When Valame got the little bit of a shove, I thought it had no effect on the play.
Mm.
And again, I know they say you're right to hold your line, this, that, and the other, but looking at the replay over and over again, I'm like, despite the little shove, I just thought Sebo dropped it cold. So in the end, if I'm being a little bit selfish, I'm kind of glad that New Zealand did find a way through, because I don't even think they've played close to their best football yet. I think they're probably...
No, they haven't. And that there's no guarantee that they're going to. Nah. They've only got one game to produce it.
And that was the point I was just about to make. I think they've probably disappointed me more than anyone, because I think they've been very individual. But at the same time, pool games, Hughes wasn't available for two of them. Last 20 was sort of playing injured. Dallin's been in and out. Laiota's only played one game. Like, they've sort of limped their way through. Morata only lasted one game. I think their biggest concern is that sort of side of things. They haven't got any... continuity. Those guys are red hot in the NRL.
It's a long year.
Exactly. But even between Fish and Depine, Nelson, there's a lot of guys there I don't think have played their best game. So hoping and thinking what you're saying, was hoping to see the ass-kicking shoes come on for the weekend, but thinking if they're ever going to pull out their best punch, you'd want it to be this week.
Yeah.
And you'd think they'd need no more motivation than playing Australia. So I'm hoping a lot of those guys bring their best game, because we certainly haven't seen it yet. And we talked about it the other week. It is hard to draw a form line, especially with who they play in the pools and who's been playing in their teams in general. So this game, even as a market, like, I saw the way it was framed and thought, New Zealand at 450 or 460 or whatever they were, I thought looked pretty good odds, because I don't really think until they get on the field and play that night you can make a judgment call at all. The other side of it, similar to yourself, I thought, Samoa the first week with the sort of feedback we got from people that we know are over there, I'm not saying that was the only reason they copped the score that they did, but I certainly think they're in a different place to where they were when they first arrived. Can they win? Similar point. I guess it comes down to their spine. First game, just absolutely zero control. Kicked terribly. Discipline was awful. And I expect all those little things that I thought they would bring to be there in this game, which was...
I'd be shocked if a team outside of Australia and New Zealand won it, I'd be shocked. England might enthuse their way to the World Cup. Because I certainly don't think they've got more talent than Australia and New Zealand, but they've, as I said, they've got far more enthusiasm at the moment. They're playing with a lot of energy.
Well, I said at the preview, I thought the biggest worry I sort of had was more spine and then what they could get out of the Super League-style players, because I think their best players have been the NRL guys. The forwards have been brilliant. The guys in that pack side of things, the outside backs, like Herbie Farmworth, has looked outstanding. Dom Young's been great, but the guys that they've sort of had meshed in from that side of things, I think have been brilliant. I guess we'll see how things play out. But quick review of those games from the weekend. The Australia-Lebanon one, not a lot to review there. 48-4, similar point to what you made before. I guess there wasn't a lot to take out of it in terms of style of football. Changes in lineup and what we get this week. God knows at the moment he's named 19. He's got Hunt and Regan Campbell-Gillard there to potentially come back in. But at the moment, as it stands, and surely he won't go this way with the 19, I'm assuming it's just named this way, he's got both hookers and Dave Cherry Evans. If you go into a game against New Zealand with Hunt starting, Harry on the bench, and Daly Cherry Evans.
I don't even know what we're talking about. We need to talk about it, but it's just fucking ridiculous.
I'm assuming late Cherry Evans would be the one for me who misses out naturally. I'd go with the dual nines, and you've got automatic cover for half already in Hunt, and then I'd pick Regan Campbell-Gillard and go with three forwards.
Pick your best team. Put your best team down and say beat it.
You're happy with Whiten being the other centre? They got Luttrell and Fox. Left-hand side with Crichton, right-hand side.
I'd have Burton.
Yep, you'd have Burton.
Yeah.
What, even if he plays on the right, not left?
Yeah, I don't care. He's just more a centre than what Whiten is, in my opinion.
So they've gone Whiten on the right with Val. And obviously Nathan, Liam Martin. And
look, I'd lean more to playing Whiten and Hunt on the bench. Because at least
play Whiten can play.
No, you could play one at nine. You could play the other in the back row centre. Like, I could justify that more than playing Hunt and Cherry Evans on the bench.
I'm just saying playing 1-9.
I wouldn't do it, but what I'm saying is I'd more do that than I would the way that they've named it. I think they've named it because for piss and wind. Let's be honest. There's no way that's the way they're going to go. And if they do, they need to get off the Hong Kongs.
Mm. Well, 30-0, like I said, at half-time, but a poor second half.
But how are New Zealand going to beat Australia? What's their plan going to be? They're going to try and roll through the middle and be physical. So we need to have three fours on the bench.
You can't carry. I'm fine with them having Hunt, because they can Hunt, just, like I said.
Yeah.
Ticks all those boxes and covers all those spots. The Cherry Evans one for now, I'm just sitting there going, sure, that's just a G up until game day and they roll Regan or something.
A lot of people have got a short memory, because the last time we played a team that was any good, it was Tonga, and they kicked their ass. We haven't played New Zealand in... Jeez, it must be almost 4 years now, is it? 3 or 4 years.
Well, we hadn't played a test.
The last game we played against a good team was Tonga, and they kicked our ass.
It's 2019, I think.
So I don't know where this arrogance comes from in these games. Just pick your best team and focus on yourself.
Well, again, like you said, second half of year was not a true reflection and not something they're going to be able to bring to New Zealand. 66% for the game, 15 errors. They really packed it up. Cleary's goal-kicking as well. Real surprising. Like, I know he's getting plenty of practice, but he's been kicking terribly.
I don't know what to make of it, man. They're saying it's the balls, but the balls, to me, they look like Steedens.
Exactly.
So I don't know. Are the balls cold? Is it, like, it looks cold over there.
I don't know. I mean,
like, being a former goal kicker, a fucking cold ball is hard to kick. It's not easy to kick. Has he got the yips? You might just have the yips. You just go through little phases where you don't hit the ball cleanly. And Well, is he doing as much practice?
I was about to say, probably not. If it's conditions, it's probably more the practice thing, because we've seen Reece Martin kicked.
Well, it's practice in the conditions.
I know he lives. He's been playing over there and living there, but Brandon Wakeham kicked the last 12 in a row. They've seen a few guys kicking, and I'm just like, well, he's
maybe
one particularly who's been struggling. And New Zealand have obviously been terrible with their goal kicking, but Rapana on the weekend got the radar on when it mattered most. He was 4 from 5. The only one he missed was from the sideline. So that was one thing I was looking at them going, they need to certainly clean that up for a bigger game.
Yeah, you'd think so.
But yeah, in terms of Lebanon, you got what you expected. I think they were pretty good. For the tournament side of things, I think Checker, considering he's, you know, from a completely different code, done a pretty good job.
Yeah.
But yeah, he had your moments there where Moses stepped up, and you've got the outside of it where you get to see the emergence of a young guy like Khalid Rajid for the Bulldogs, and Zakim from Parramatta. I'm not sure if he's been upgraded or he's going to get a preseason or what to go is there. And we already knew about Karaz, but there's another one there in Morcos, who's down at Canberra. So that was some positive for the Lebanon team in that campaign. And
They
certainly gave New Zealand more than they could handle in the first game, which was good. So overall, I'd say making the finals is a good result for Lebanon. Tick. So
overachievement.
Good for them. And Australia, like you said, all my questions are the things that you don't get out of these games that just mean nothing, which is the combination between our halves.
My concern is they're just so left side heavy.
Spine.
It's just land to the right and shift left. And if that doesn't work, then we just go back to the right to shift left. We look, pretty easy to... Not easy to handle, because the players who get the ball are not easy to tackle. And, you know, that double block shape where Cleary runs the little drop and, you know, goes from sort of slow to fast, like that play's been very successful for Penrith. And the players that are running it are going to be difficult to handle. But, yeah, I just feel as though that's the way that they're going to go. I don't know whether there's not much link between Munster and Cleary. They don't often stack on the one side of the field a lot.
Mm. This is the point I'm making.
Tedesco's not a swing player, so they're sort of trying to play a style to complement all three of them, and I don't really feel as though we've found any fluency yet.
No, they're all dominant in their own way, and their teams and play a certain way, and they're trying to do that. Like you said, it's almost three different styles. You've got Teddy, who's heavy.
Well, their strengths are three different things. Yeah.
Teddy's heavy through the middle and channeling, really, and
complement each other.
Pushing on the ball and just sort of working and grinding his way. And like you said, sometimes he swings or jumps down.
Which is the issue that New South Wales have had. We have, since Maloney sort of gone out of the team, and I know Maloney was often a runner as well, but Cleary sort of struggled while he hasn't had, you know, that passing 5-8 with him. Like, he struggles with Luai at origin level. He struggles with White at origin level. I think he's probably crying out for someone who he can link up with and ball play a little bit with. I think that'd really open up his game a lot. And Jerome's got far better at that than what he was when he first came into first grade. First came into first grade, he was more a runner.
He was just a runner. Now
he's really developed his passing game. But Munster's a very off-the-cuff player, which is cool, but it's going to take some time for them to work through that combination. I don't feel as though they've struck it up. And in a tournament style, you know, you just don't have that time. And the Aussie players, and Mal said it, they're not training. They're not doing a lot of training.
But the point is,
it's not showing on the field.
It's hard to build those combinations or get to those areas when you're not pushed to. Like you said, they've been scoring off simple tips, shift plays, broken tackles. Like, they haven't had to reach into the kit bag or really construct or build pressure.
And they might not yet have to.
Use shape, you know, any of that sort of stuff.
They might come out and blow New Zealand away and blow England away tomorrow away. You don't know.
How's it all going to come together this week? That's probably the biggest thing there, but we'll move on from the Australia-Lebanon game. Like you said, good effort by the Lebanon side to get to that quarter final, and some good young players there for people to watch out for heading into the NRL this year. England, as you said, similar deal. It was 38-0 or 36-0 at halftime. That game was over in the first 25. Papua New Guinea had no ball. The first try, it's always a worrying sign when a front row crashes over, and then they scored three times off kicks. The one that really summed it up for me is when Alex Johnston drops that ball back in the, you know, from the in goal, and they scored just from a simple grounding. And England, much like Australia, scrappy second half, not as clinical, finished off with a couple of nice moments. But bar the Samoa game, which didn't go anything like I expected it to, I find it really hard to get much form out of it, because at the same point, they haven't been put under pressure. No one's built pressure. No one's cycled with them. They haven't been pressed to really do anything.
Samoa did for 50 minutes. And then they just put the cue in the rack, and England just ran an absolute train on them. So, Yeah, I think there's a formula there. Samoa need to not play that style of game, not try and soccer with England. Like, I guess to a degree you have to do it, right? But they also need to enforce their style of footy on England. Because that's what Australia and New Zealand will do. Well, and we've seen England just crumble.
The two things that I thought would be the part of their game that would impress me most, they didn't do the first game, which was I thought they'd be dominant in yardage, and I thought their forward pack would lay a platform for second phase, which on the weekend against Tonga, they had twice as many offloads, twice as many tackle breaks, and I thought they excelled in both those areas, which they did in the first game.
Yeah, they've warmed into their style.
Paulo, Papali, I just want to see them go out there and
play your style.
Yeah. Dominate off your forwards, get good set starts off To'o, Talon, Suoliti, etc., and then it's up to Luai and Milford, who have, again, slowly started to look better, to put the icing on things. And that's probably my biggest thing for this weekend is set finishes. I think they'll definitely bring those two elements they didn't game one, and just a bit of discipline. Like, they made errors coming out of yardage, they put more pressure on themselves, but if they bring that power game from the backfield and through the middle, yeah, and generate from second
also,
phase.
Yeah, set finishes, but it's also discipline when the other team's coming out and not giving England a short field. Like, give them a long field and be physical with them.
Hmm. But, yeah, England, again, like I said, similar questions I have after that Papua New Guinea game. How are they going to play? Is it going to work? It's been pretty straightforward. They've had a lot of easy tip-tip football. Halves running pretty freely. Forward pack's been dominant. Like, they're scoring pretty simple tries.
Mm.
So we're going to see things put into play round two against Samoa. And again, I'm certainly expecting a much better showing from Samoa this week. But yep. PNG, similar deal. I think there were some real positives to come out of what they did. There's some guys there looking like they're going to get some opportunities. Kyle Labert has been talked about from a few Super League clubs and a bit of interest. He's been there at Queensland Cup for a while. Both the wingers, Roderick Ty and Jimmy Nutlick, I think he's contracted to the Tigers. They're talking about him doing a pre-season.
It's a bit of a false economy. Like, I know, at the moment, clubs are looking, and the guys who are doing their recruitment now should be sacked, to be honest. Well, like, they should have done their recruitment all year. You shouldn't be recruiting now.
But you can do training trials. You can bring...
Yeah, that's cool.
I'm saying there's other avenues to get guys in.
Like, if you're scratching around trying to recruit now...
This is where Justin Ollam got picked up from Melbourne, from the World Cup
a
couple of months prior. So.
Great. So that's one.
I'm just sort
Who
of
else
saying.
There's guys come out of there the World you bring Cup in for and this sort of been a regular first grade.
Whether they get a training trial or a cup deal. So, yeah, some things like that. Labor, I think more...
Look, let's be honest. PNG are a cup team. They play in the Queensland Cup, and the Queensland Cup isn't as good as the New South Wales Cup. The Queensland Cup is probably somewhere between the Ron Massey in New South Wales and the New South Wales Cup.
I certainly think there's a few guys there that are NRL standard.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Like, Pape's been here before, gone over, done well. I'd be interested to see how he plays in the Super League next year. But,
yeah, I think it's a bit of, sort of overstating, you know, the achievements of some of these teams. But I guess it's a little bit of recency bias as well. What you've last seen is what you've last seen, and that's what most present in your mind.
Not saying any rep players, but I mean opportunities. Mm. Like, for some people, this is the opportunity that they need.
I get it.
Get
100%.
I get it. So there's a few guys there that may get a look in.
There's a lot of guys doing themselves plenty of favours as well. Like, they're certainly not hurting themselves.
Mm. I like someone like Labert in particular, watching the tournament again, I've always sort of wondered what if it was just the fact he's happy where he is and he's a local up there to not go to Super League or not be somewhere. But I think he'd well and truly...
Well, you got to pick your whole life up and move over.
Yeah, I know. Well and truly fit in if he's interested in taking that opportunity. So, similar deal again. I think they achieved what they should have achieved. They got to the finals, come up against a better side.
Yeah, they just got spanked.
England did what you'd expect
them to do. Like a Reddit step trial on the way. Like, really, it was 40 after 25 minutes or something.
Yeah, it was 30 out at half time. Yeah, but, they conceded six in the first 25. They had no football.
Mm.
Like I said, England have been dominant in every facet. But, again, I don't think they've had a real game yet, bar the first one. And I expect a much better Samoa this time around. New Zealand, Fiji, well, this was the one that really blew me away. Just probably the thing, again, that bothered me more and just watching the whole way through has just been, it's been very individual. It's been like moments of brilliance from Joey Manu or someone just taking it off their own back. It hasn't looked like a collective.
Offensively? You're talking offensively?
And defensively.
Defensively, they've been horrible.
And like watching Chans play centre just blows my mind. It's... The first try was just blatant. Like, everyone's come in and done their job on their inside, and he's sort of caught between, do I go in and out? And Kevin Aguama literally drives a truck through the hole. And I can't remember the commentator was, the Pommy commentator, saying, Dylan Brown's bit. I'm like, Dylan Brown's done his job. The one who's let the chain down there is the guy who can't decide whether he wants to follow or go. You follow your inside. He's just stopped completely. The other side of the field, the Rapana one, was a poor decision as well, where he's jumped in front of the centre and Ihiku and tried to, you know, murder somebody, and it's just a simple tip and finish off. So full credit to Fiji when they got to 12 zip, and with the lineup, they went over their under strength as well. They had some guys pull out late. But, you know, New Zealand had their moments. That scrum play, they made things look very, very simple. You know, the Manu moment at the end where they got themselves back even was just, again, another one of those moments of brilliance. They were very left side heavy as well. They stripped in there a few times. Have to pay, again, some credit. Some of the try saves. Nguama, one on halftime on Mulitalo. The one that Wakeham and Sivo had on Mulitalo was a cracker. I thought for sure that ball got to the ground, but somehow they basically made him float on air. They stopped Manu multiple times, and they probably couldn't have done much more than what, you know, they did. And then that led to, like I said, later in the game, obviously the moment that a lot of people were frustrated with, which was the strip penalty on Kikau and Manu, which many feel, obviously, was the big turning point there for New Zealand to kick that two, and then they've obviously iced it on full-time with the try.
Mm.
So, if I'm being honest, like I said, I understand why people feel Fiji were a little hard done by, but if I'm being completely honest, if Fiji got through, this week would not be worth watching. And that's no offence to Fiji.
But they didn't.
Would have been an awesome result, and full credit to them. If they would have got through, it would have been massive, but I would have not felt anywhere near the same way about this game. And as much as I never
felt like they were going to win that game.
New Zealand's been disappointed. Their best game, if they put it together, is enough to beat Australia and win this tournament. Question is, will we see it? But worry, again, similar to what you said, just selections. You know, having Chance at centre bothers me. Nelson playing in the back row instead of having Papali'i and boosting your middle rotation. There's just a few things there. Like even Foran, I love Kieran Foran, but to me, he's a half or he's nothing. So if you're going to cover on your bench and want to carry someone, I'd rather have a Marshall King who's going to play nine halves, like has the potential to play a few positions.
Mm.
I don't really want to see Foran playing 10 random minutes at dummy half. He's either in my halves or he's not my team.
Yeah,
okay. And similar like the middle rotation, what they're rolling with at the moment is Jesse. Jared obviously got suspended again, and he hasn't been named at all in the squad for this week. But to push Papali'i, Nakora, and a few of these guys on your bench and carry all these random back rows, how about you just pick your best middle and put your back rows in the back row? Like, I want Nelson with Fish, and if Leota's available this week, I want that three-man rotation. I want Papali'i playing on edge. I still feel like Jesse and Kenny, a little bit underwhelming, and they're very loyal to a couple of their veteran players, but then this week they have Big Jared. I'm like, that's sort of where my head's at if I'm Michael Maguire. I just want my best team on the field.
That'd be smart.
So the way they've named it, though, is Jared's not in, and they're two guys on the extended bench at this point in time, Dallin and Moses. So given fitness issues, they may or may not play. If not, it's the same 17, I think, as last week. So if Chance is there again on that left-hand side, like you're talking about with Australia, they need to work on getting to the right. They need to get football there.
Yeah,
find ways to flip the field or even get Latrell to swing if they want to try and double up, or get White in one-on-one, get him some early ball, because if Chance is out there again, that's where I'm going all day. Yeah, that'd be a real focus for me. But
well, they're going to be going left.
Well, they're going to have to. If you're watching the video, we need to find ways to get back the other way. Have to.
Well, let's see if it happens.
That's the spot where they bled a few times.
I've got no faith that's going to happen.
The other question, I guess, is if they're at their best with their middles, that's why I'm sitting there looking at his rotation going, you have to pick the third middle. Have to.
We'll see.
We'll wait and see how that one plays out. But again, full credit to Fiji. After disappointing start, they certainly surged their way through. And like I said, late pullouts, you know, they didn't get either the Safidis, a couple of guys in the Sims as well. Corbin obviously joined a bit later, but there was a few they thought they were going to get. But again, great opportunity for some younger guys. Wong from the Roosters, the fact that kid's only 18, turning 19, I thought he really handled himself quite well. He's looking like a fairly, you know, bright prospect in terms of what he's going to do in the future. I think it's Taniela Sidragu. He was contracted last year with the Cowboys. He was like a seventh winger. They've been playing him as a 13. He's a big body. I think he's only young. So again, more another preseason, another opportunity. And then obviously a couple of their veterans did very, very well. Kev, Tui, Kikau in the pool stages, and Taruva. Taruva obviously really put himself on the radar over that mid-year game, and he had those few opportunities with
Penrith. But again, like, if you'd been doing your recruiting and watching, you know that you shouldn't take the World Cup.
Well, that's why it's smart by Penrith. They locked him up early. Everyone watching now will be ringing and knocking on the door, and if you're Penrith, you're saying, too bad, so sad. You've had
should have been watching
time to be junior watching
grades for the last 4 years.
We've got him now locked in for a couple of years, and we're not letting him go anywhere. So, yeah, there were some positives, and again, good result for them. But Tonga Samoa, that was the closest game besides that one with New Zealand and Fiji. And in the end, it was Samoa. So full circle. After one game, they were bagging out Matt Parrish and saying they should have given it to the Johns brothers and Sonny Bill, this, that and the other. And now they're in the semi-final of the World Cup. So they've certainly worn their way into things. It wasn't the ideal starting. It hasn't been about that it's challenges either. Like I said, first game, they lost three players of the tournament. They had to call up a couple of the English-based Samoan players. Then they lost a couple more along the way. They've just found out that Junior Paulo had his suspension overturned and Suoli'i only got a caution. So luckily for them, that would have been pretty much a hammer blow, I think, if both of them got suspended. They can't afford to lose anyone else with what they've got available to them with the injuries they've already had. But yeah, they've found their way back, and this game was similar. There was some moments on both sides that were disappointing. I think the first one, Katoa, you know, you're an 18-year-old kid that shows that greenness. It's just a simple out in line by Sua. Hopawati falls over, and then obviously immediately they get a response. Sua Leti with that knee lift, which, to be honest, looked terrible. I know he's been cautioned a few times over here, but I was very surprised that he got off again. But like you said, different judiciary, different setup for the internationals. But that led to them getting their first try, stripped them way too easily on that left-hand side. And then it was just a bit of a grind for a period of time there. The Luai try was probably the worst one I think I've seen. Three or four guys overchased on a shift play there and all heading out to the wing. And he just drove an absolute truck to that gap to get back to the post.
Mm.
But the one at the end was the one that really got me. The kick for To'o, everyone was more interested in trying to shepherd or get around Stephen Crichton. There was two unmarked players out there when that ball bounced. I don't know what they were doing. But the penalty goal prior to that as well from Felice and the strip got them the 8-point advantage. Tonga gave themselves a late hope there with Kalamatungi come up with a great pickup on a poor kick from Jerome, which turned into a quick play of the ball, and they literally just went 80 metres the other way. Katoa pushed through with Moses Suoli, and late there with a couple of plays left, Tui Malalola here decided it was an idea to try and throw a grubber kick in with two or three plays to go. I didn't think they just would have used all your tackles and tried to win the game, but Samoa get away with that one.
Neither team were...
They weren't great.
Sort of at their best. I don't think they fielded their strongest teams.
No.
They left some players here and some players injured. And yeah, a good result for Samoa, a huge result.
Yeah, and again, I've been a bit surprised. Like, Tago's injured. I've got no problem with Lafoy. I think Lafoy's been good, considering a late fill-in. Liggy Siao coming in to play in the back row sort of surprised me, but he's done his job. In terms of other players, like, I thought maybe he would have given Kelmer or Tuolagi or someone else that sort of spot, but sort of limited minutes off the bench.
Mm.
But their middles have certainly got back to what you expected. I think Oregon and Hunt have certainly, you know, raised the standard, and Paulo and Papali have built into the tournament. They were both great the other day. Milford, who I was very critical of, basically thinking I would have gone with Harris DeVito or somebody else, played his best game in a long time.
And he got men of the match.
They're going to need that because, yeah, you know, that's been lacking. And I know he's been in and out in the last few years, have been a bit of a mixed bag, but the first game, like I said, the kicking options, play five between him and Jerome, they look like they've come together much better than what they have, which is, again, they've had some adversity, obviously, to get to this point, so not a bad result. But on the Tonga side of things, you know, it's just the small stuff, like I said, again. You got Lola here, and you look at your spine like we talked about before the game. Hopawati hasn't played all tournament. They go with him for the final. He wasn't bad, but out of the options they sort of had there and how he used the forwards and who he picked, again, there was always going to be good players that missed out, but yeah, I don't think I completely agree with all the selections. And then there's what we've talked about before, like just more reflecting on the Penrith side of things. Saw the brilliance of Sony to put the deft little kick in to set up Tokiaho, but then obviously saw the flip side, what we were talking about, that Penrith are going to have to probably come up with some stuff to support him in defence because they just spotted him up as soon as he got on the field. That last try they got was Suoli'i and a few guys just going straight through him.
You've got to take the good with the bad.
I know that.
You're going to get that.
But I'm saying, from a coaching perspective, you'd hope that Penrith are going to move him around a little bit and not just isolate him.
Hmm.
Like, if you're just going to see him there in the middle, he's the
guy.
Well,
he's smart. Like, we attacked the shit out of him when we played him this year, and there were times where he was playing centre. There were times where left centre, he'd go to right wing.
And that's what I mean.
To avoid us, you know.
Like, I hope they do that when
he
gets
in. We got our numbers up on him early, and then he's just too smart.
Because it's that exact point we're making. Like, Kenny can't do what Luke can do in attack, but he's a great defender.
It's not like some of the boys are saying at half time in that game, well, we fucking can't find him.
Hmm. And then on the flip,
that just shows you that he's intelligent.
The brilliance and the manipulation, the kicking game's all great, but obviously he can't defend like Kenny. But I think Penrith are going to be smart enough to obviously maximise what he does and move him around. And yeah, overall, Christian Wolfe looked a little disappointed, but
oh, so he should be.
Yeah, it's not what they're after. Tokiaho thought was good. Tamalolo, Sully, but yeah, overall. I guess probably the most exciting thing I saw for them in the tournament was I've been wondering about Katoa. It's been a bit of a weird year with what happened at Penrith. I don't think they're going to throw him in the deep end straight away at the Dolphins. I certainly don't hope they do with O'Sullivan and Milford being there. At least give him some time in cup and maybe a taste this year. But for an 18-year-old to sort of show some of the signs he did, he looks quite the player.
Yeah, he killed New South Wales Cup here. So
very interesting.
I think he'll handle Queensland Cup.
With yeah, very interesting to see how he develops over the next year. And yeah, they move on from there. So like we said, that's the quarters. Looking at the semi-finals, Australia, New Zealand. Again, biggest question mark in preview on this one is just who plays. I think surely goes with the dual nines and you've got automatic cover and Hunt for halves and goes with three forwards on the bench. Surely. Has to. Mm. They're left side heavy, like you said. And then you've got the New Zealand side of things. Would you make a late change if Dallin and Lauda are available? Like I couldn't leave Chance at centre.
No, probably
like,
not.
I'm trying to figure out how he rotates it now. Like you got Nakora,
you have to play Nakora though
on the bench, and I'd swing Papali'i back to the bench. I'd start with, I'd put Nelson back to the bench, and I'd start with Papali'i at the back row, and boost my middle rotation.
I'd start Nelson in the front row, and if push Moses, him in the middle, I'd push Jesse Bromwich back.
If Moses is available, I'd have him as well.
Well, yeah, definitely. I wouldn't play Jesse.
Yeah, I've said as much during the year watching both of them. Think Kenny's
I'd move Nelson back to the front row, put Jesse back to the bench, and yeah, bring Papali'i into the back row.
Mm.
Probably play Murata in the centres.
Well, Murata's not available.
What's wrong with him?
He injured a pec. So at the moment on the bench, he's got Papali'i, Foran, Nakora, Liu, and the only changes they can make are Laiota and Dallin in their extended squad. So I'd probably be putting Nakora in, dropping Chans out of the team altogether, rolling Nelson back to the bench and starting Papali'i in the back row. And
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I think he's probably, again, like I'm looking at Foran. I don't really want to carry someone to play 10 minutes of nine. I would have rather have Marshall King if you want to have nine and half cover, but yeah. Again, Jesse's the captain, so again, I know they go with the respect side of things, but if Fish, Laiota, Nelson are all available, that would sort of be where my head's at.
Yeah, but, fair.
Yeah, I don't know. I look at both sides and think there's maybe a couple of things I don't agree with, but if they bring their best game with their forwards, and obviously, hopefully if Hughes is healthy, I think this could be an absolute belter. I'm hoping it's going to be an absolute belter.
Yeah, it could be.
But in a couple of World Cups there, New Zealand got the wood on us, and then we sort of wrestled it back there for a few years. And then, like you said, it's been 4 years since COVID the last time. We've got a very different looking team when we lost to Tonga, but this is certainly going to be an interesting contest.
Yeah.
Obviously, the pros and cons, like you said, we know what New Zealand are going to want to do. Power game. Hopefully break down our ruck, generate second phase, and then it's going to come down to those points, like you said, how you transition your set ends. How disciplined they are out of yardage. And then for us, I think we've probably got a slight advantage, hopefully, you'd think, with our kicking game and our back five. It's going to be how we get ourselves out of yardage and how we finish our sets as well, and can we withstand some of that pressure. Obvious advantage in terms of skill, guys like Yo, Murray, etc. Hopefully play a little bit of tip football and try and move away from the middle, not just play straight into it. But it's a very intriguing matchup.
Hmm.
What do you reckon?
Oh, I think I've sort of outlined it, right? New Zealand are going to stop Australia's left side shift. New Zealand need to, yeah, similar to what Samoa need to do, they need to play their own style. They need to be physical. They need to offload. They need to put some fatigue into Australia. And I think they really need to pressure Australia's halves from the inside and just make sure that Harry Grant and Ben Hunt have to pass the ball consistently.
Mm.
Don't allow Australia to roll out a nine and get Tedesco involved in the game. So, and then if you control that area, control the play of the ball and control the speed, it allows you to put that inside pressure on the half. So that's going to be the key for New Zealand. And then I'd be fucking laying all over the ruck. I'd be doing, making it as messy as I possibly can.
Yeah. And you've got to kill the pass. If Tarpany, these sort of guys can't find offloads.
And then from there, you've got to get your own game on offensively. Yeah, I'd be looking to punch Australia in the mouth through the middle of the field, depending on who they pick. And then I'd be moving them around a little bit.
Yeah, well, certainly
be targeting the halves.
Certainly early doors. If it's Hunt and Jake in the middle, I think they have to get stuck in really early there. Hunt does his job, but again, those two guys can sort of get caught in contests where you can get a quick play of the ball or get tackled around the legs by someone like a Jake and get rolling and hop off the back of it. But expecting, like I said, big games, because I think Fish has been a bit sloppy, like you said, big season. Nelson, even Tarpany hasn't been his best. So all those sort of guys that have been just plodding along, if their best game comes this week, this is going to be outstanding. Yeah. But the shining light for them has been Joseph Manu. He's been everything in all facets of the game. Australia, if there's any sort of focus, wherever he is, you need to have your eyes up, because he's been incredible.
Yeah,
And I think the real key for them and makes him tick, which is what worried me when he struggled at the back end of last week, is Jerome Hughes. Jerome Hughes really is the steering wheel and brings that little bit of direction that they lack.
Big time.
So I think he's a real key for them, and that's the same on the flip. We want to see the halves and clear in Munster, how they combine. That goal kicking needs to be better on that general play kicking. So I know I said beforehand that I was going to back New Zealand to win it and win the whole thing. At the moment, I'm going to lean towards Australia. But
yeah, I've got no idea.
More of it's got to do with, like I said, I don't know how these lineups are going to get picked, and the fact that they've had some health issues and guys in and out and haven't really found their best yet. I'll be going with Australia, I think. But see how that plays out on the weekend. And those odds brought to you by bluebet.com.au. If you're going to have a bet with anyone, make sure you do it with the True Blue Bookie. Australia are $1.20 favourites. New Zealand are $4.60.
No respect.
Like I said, I definitely like the start. You get 12.5 for New Zealand. 1 to 12 Australia, $3.550 for New Zealand. 13 plus Australia, $1.82, $17 for New Zealand. England, Samoa, last time they were heavy. Well, they weren't heavy favourites, but they were definitely the favourites.
Just favourites.
Started at $1.70, I think, and then England were $2.10. This time around, England are $1.33 with bluebet.com.au, and Samoa are $3.20. 8.5 start available. 1 to 12 England, $2.80, $4.80 for Samoa. 13 plus England, $2.26, $9.60. There for Samoa at 13 plus. We don't have lineups for that game yet. They haven't been released. I'm assuming they're going to have to be out by tomorrow at a similar time. But I'd expect Samoa to basically come in with the same team.
Yeah.
Unless Tago's healthy, I don't know. Like, that's how finding news or updates for this has been really hard. What's been on the injuries, suspension stuff. I've had to find on other websites.
To be honest,
it hasn't been on NRL.com.
It's been like a chook raffle.
So I don't know what his injury is, but Lafay's been doing a solid job in terms of changes in the back row. I don't know if he will make a change. I think he'll stick with what he had last week. So I'm expecting to see Lingi Siau play there on the bench again, be, you know, Tapiao and the guys that he had there as well. And then on the English side of things, similar deal. They've rolled through their squad. I think they'll be pretty settled. Herbie, Young, I think your only question is who's your centre. They've rolled through a couple of different centres on the other side of the field. Herbie's definitely one of them. But you think they'll go with Watkins or Paul Pierce?
Well, I think they'd probably just stick with Watkins.
So you have Watkins on the right with Dom Young.
Yeah.
Yeah, left side you got Makinson, obviously with Herbie.
Yeah, why would you change it?
Mm. George Williams, you know, McAlorin, who I messed up last time, is at McGeekin, who was the back row. Their forward pack's done a good job, but let's see round two. I'm sure Samoa really got a point they want to prove here, but so you think that structure for England could get them in a bit of trouble if Samoa turn up with their best game?
Oh, I just think England, the English game is structured. They love structure. They're the NRL, just won the NRL back 4 or 5 years when we were block to block and structure and, you know, get it a three-man. Everything's about holding up a three-man. I don't know.
But you think they're just playing?
I think they're very structured.
They're playing like tram line to tram line, trying to get 6-4 splits. They take a
lot of
swing.
Yeah, they take a lot of setup plays. I just watch them and go like they're running hard. They're fucking playing hard.
Yeah,
like no doubt about that.
Generating quick play.
Yeah, they're playing good footy.
Yeah,
no question about that.
Just more a question of like you said, if someone brings again a gun to a gunfight with them rather than a knife.
But you just need to have a plan around how you're going to beat them. I think there is a clear way to beat them.
Hmm.
Well, in my opinion. Yeah, doesn't mean I'm right.
But I hope the best version of Samoa turns up because this could be a really good game. But if Paulo Papali'i come to the party like they did last week, along with Oregon and Hunt, who I think have been outstanding, and kick the front door in, if Milford and Luai can get off the back of that, I definitely think you can get it similar spots for them. I think you can pick their edges apart. Get at those halves. McAlorum, I don't think someone that's really been spotted up yet because, again, they haven't been in a game where someone's been able to spot him up yet. Being a smaller body, I know who I want to bash and bomb. If Tompkins is the one, any time I'm in a good kicking position with inside 50, I'm just hurling one up and trying to drag him and ragdoll
him. Well, he's the same thing. I just bash him from the inside.
Yeah.
Just as often as you can hit his inside hip, I think. Yeah.
And the yardage shot this time, again, there was no line speed, no effort, everything last week because Samoa had a bit too much of a party week one, but in yardage this time, they can't let Dom, Young and these sort of guys just roll up for you. Last time, it was just an absolute circus how easily they were picked apart. And even the tries, like you said, again, just from the fact that the ruck was so incredibly quick, they just slowly wound in and tightened and tightened, and it was just tip footy. Just passed their way around them and just got bags of tries in the corner. So, big game needed from Luai and Milford and that forward pack in particular. So, looking for those two leaders in particular, Paulo Papali'i. If you're going to have your best game, this is the week to do it.
Pretty much.
So interested in this one. I think I had them in our preview making the final. I don't know. I really don't know. I'm sort of like
England.
No, I had Samoa. I had New Zealand Samoa as my final. The way things are going now, again, off form line, it's hard to tell from where the pool game's going. I'm going to favour England slightly, but I'd love to see Samoa bring their best game and somehow win this. But similar points to what you've made so far, England have given off that vibe that, you know, copped a lot of criticism, Super League's copped criticism, English teams copped criticism and all their players, home World Cup final, a lot of energy, you know, maybe that side of things, like you've sort of said, gets them across the line. I don't know. But if the best version of Samoa turns up, and I hope it does, I definitely think they can win this game. I thought that at the start of the tournament, which is why I had them coming out of the group, and it obviously didn't happen, but I'd love to see it. It would be awesome. But only time will tell. And that one's at the Emirates.
Yeah, that's
going to Arsenal Stadium, so that's pretty cool.
Go the Gunners.
Finals, obviously, at Old Trafford. I don't know. Where was the other game? Was that it?
It's at Leeds, I think.
It's Ellen Road, isn't it? Or am I thinking heading of... Ellen Road, Leeds.
Yeah, heading there.
So, there you go. But the odds for that one, like we said before, England, the favourites... Would you be confident taking the start on both teams?
No way.
No?
Oh, I'd be taking the 13.5 New Zealand.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I told you, if you had to take a start either way, you didn't have a choice, 12.5 Australia and New Zealand. You get 12.5 point start if you take New Zealand.
I'm taking New Zealand.
And on the flip, 8.5 start, England or Samoa. You get 8.5 for Samoa.
Yeah, I'd take the 8.5.
Yeah. I think I'd probably be right there with you. I'd feel a bit better if it was 10.5, but I guess anyone would. Two-try game. So there you go. Looking forward to that side of things, but that's sort of where the World Cup is at this point in time. The draw got released today.
Who cares?
Who cares? No, it's well. A lot of people get excited. They start planning trips and fixtures. I'd like to say we are going to Magic Round Final this year, but that's yet to be determined. But that'll be round 10. I think it's the weekend of the 5th or 6th of May. Friday to Sunday. That one was one I had a particular interest in because of, like I said, obviously something I'd really like to attend. I think your team's playing the Parramatta Eels. I think the Storm were playing Souths. Roosters, Cowboys. That's Magic Round. So I was having a look at what fixtures were on each day. Didn't look like too bad. Round one, we got a good one to go to. Opening night, Storm Eels at Combank. Thursday night football.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Penrith are at home Friday night football, the night after, against the Broncos. Kevy rolls into town.
Yeah, good.
Warriors are the early Friday game against the Knights.
How they've still got that fucking game in the draw is ridiculous.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Just get rid of it.
Early Saturday game, the new regime at Manly under Seibold, who's finally been announced, starts against Seraldo. That's the early Saturday. Cowboys Canberra, North Queensland. That's a pretty good game. Sharkies South had a couple of good games last year. That's at PointsBet, the Priz. Dolphins inaugural game is against the Roosters.
Good luck.
At Suncorp. That's a pretty harsh initiation. Yeah. Dragons fans happy. You get 2 automatic points. You're on the bye. And
I'll be in the top 8.
The last game of round 1 is your mighty Titans up against the Tigers. 6 o'clock Sunday night.
Absolute stink bowl.
What a way to finish round 1.
Yeah,
very good. There you go. Draw's been released. Plenty of fixtures again. Going around country areas. The Warriors finally back home. They have 12 fixtures. I still think they could have done them a little bit of a solid and given...
Oh, fucking how the whole season isn't over there is ridiculous.
The other thing as well, I didn't really look into it, but this whole pre-season time they announced, they're like, fuck, how much football do you want to jam in? We've come off the back of 2 years non-stop.
Isn't this on the back of what... Origin. Isn't this what the players wanted?
Oh, bloody hell. I don't know. They've got the...
Like, be careful what you wish for.
World Club Challenge in with a pre-season tournament with a few of the teams involved. They've still got the All-Stars and we're starting earlier and it's 27 rounds with 3 boys. I've sort of looked at it and just thought, like, if I'm anyone from one of the contenders or a Penrith or a Storm or Roosters off the back of the World Cup...
Well, you know what they're going to do.
Anyone with All-Stars or that, if I reckon there's going to be some blokes again playing for a Massey Cup, they're going to get some call-ups. Well,
of course they are.
There's going to be a lot of those teams just saying no. And I think this might be one of the most odd starts to a season. You're not going to see the best football, I don't think, at least for 4 to 6 weeks.
I don't think you ever do.
Because some of these guys are going to come back. They're entitled to an 8-week break. So if you play this week or next and finish up on, say, the 19th, 8 weeks in is like early January or mid-January. So there's going to be some guys who are going to come back and basically be in the trials a month later.
So yeah, essentially.
Certainly a different year in that regard. It's going to have an impact on the way some teams start, which can hurt at times, especially heading into that rep period if you don't get things off to a good start. But I guess the other point here, just some contract stuff and bits and bobs, as there always is to finish off. Titans picked up Aaron Schopp from the Bulldogs. Still under some salary cap pressure. They're still trying to move Corey Allen. It's basically out and about there now. Well and truly, because, as you know, places leak like a sieve. They're willing to pay half his salary this year just to get rid of him. So they weren't... Corey Allen. They weren't willing to budge. He's on $500,000. He's got a year to go. They were happy to pay $250,000 if someone wants to take $250,000.
They were trying to get rid of him last year.
So the Roosters and multiple others have sniffed around out. They've come to the party, but there's no guarantee anyone's going to take him. I think they're going to end up paying more than that.
Why would you take Corey Allen? How many games did he play last year? How many games in reserve?
A handful plus injured.
Yeah.
But it was a bad deal to start with, and it's still a bad deal now.
It's still a bad deal now. It's a horrible... It's one of the worst deals in the NRL.
Arva Samana Funaway, he's on next to nothing, but they're trying to push him out as well. They've still got to get themselves into some cap shape with all the guys.
See, I don't mind Ava.
They're trying to push him out.
I know he's probably a bit long in the tooth, but he was excellent for us last year.
They've just announced Declan Casey with a 2-year extension. Jax DePine got re-signed for a year. They haven't registered Andrew Davey. Franklin Pelle, most of those contracts that everyone knows about aren't even registered yet just because they're doing this reshuffling. There were some Dogs fans again who were a little bit critical because they literally only just re-signed Schopp for 3 years and now they've moved him on. So clearly this cap situation isn't great if you're giving people 3-year extensions and moving on less than,
every club does it.
12 months later. But yeah, making moves there. And Titans, while they're at it, also extended Tino's brother Isaac, who's been in their junior system. He moves into a development deal.
Of course I did.
This year, and then he gets 2 years.
What about Shaq Mitchell? Is it a favour or can he play?
Well, that's the next one I had here.
Let's see.
He's just got a 2-year NRL deal. So
yeah,
he's moved full-time into the top squad. I thought a good bit of business, and there was plenty of talk about a lot of clubs being interested. Robson has extended with the Cowboys. Not a mega long-term deal, but he's put 2 years on top. So obviously they've met somewhere in the middle for the time being. There was talk about a return of the Dragons and plenty of clubs were sniffing around, but he's locked in now until 2025 with the Cowboys. So I think that's a good bit of business. The Tigers, surprise, surprise, they're linked to everybody, including me and you. They're trying to bring people out of retirement. This, that, and the other. Same as last week. Frizzell, Clemmer, Bateman, Brown, Moses. Staines is now over the line. They just signed Will Smith back from the Super League on a one-year deal. There's not anyone that they're not linked to, basically. They're trying to buy everybody.
Mm.
So, interesting times, as always, at the Tigers. And the Sharks and Wade Graham have come to a one-year deal. No surprise, like we talked about. I thought it would be a huge pay cut. Apparently, it is a huge pay cut. And he doesn't expect to be in the 17 and basically said as much this year that he wants to be around. He's happy to play whatever role, whether it's middle, off the bench, or in New South Wales Cup, but he just wants to be there. So, Wade Graham, cool. Again, transitioning sort of that way out. Manly, look, Shed finally announced Anthony Seibold. They extended Zach Fulton by 2 years. Morgan Boyle re-signed for 1 year. They confirmed those other signings of Ben Condon, Austin Dowse, still nothing on the Cooper Johns talk. Kepi extended till 2026. Saab extended to 2026 a few weeks before. And Ruben Garrick, who was heavily linked to Newcastle Knights to play fullback, has now signed a four-year extension until 2027. So they've handed out some bloody long-term deals, Manly. Got some guys locked in, plus the Trbojevic's and Cherry Evans until 25 and 26, respectively. There's not going to be a lot of roster movement going on there anytime soon.
No.
Penrith, I think I said it last time, they confirmed it now. Cogger got a one-year deal coming back. I think that's a sneaky good pickup. Hoskins from the Broncos, two-year pickup, good deal. Still no announcement on Falls, Eisenhuth or Semin, all still listed and apparently in discussions, but no idea. They've been linked again to Adam Kieran, who was there previously and was great in the New South Wales Cup system. He's obviously at the Roosters last year, and Peachy returned on a one-year deal. And the last bit that I picked up just before we come on, you said it, was Andrew McCulloch, who Ben Hunt, a lot of guys were like, well, he shouldn't be forced to retire because the Dragons basically stuffed up and gave him a multi-year deal when they shouldn't have. But they reckon he hasn't been there for the first week of training, and people have now taken that as he's going to be retired. So must have come to a little off-the-book agreement for a payout, I'd assume, because you wouldn't be leaving for free.
No,
but if he's gone, he doesn't have to. They signed the contract. That's their problem.
Mm.
But looking at them, same deal. They got little in, but to address that position, I don't know what they're going to do. Because as much as I'm not a huge fan of having him there at this point in time, little's not a guarantee of health. The only other player they've got in their squad and they've played there consistently as a utility is Mbai. Connor Mulhausen's still not part of their top squad. I don't even know if they've re-signed him, but he's doing the training trial of the off-season. And then Sullivan, who they're forced to play there at times, doesn't want to play hooker.
Mm.
So if McCulloch's not there, Little's basically the only real full-time genuine hooker they've got.
Good luck.
So, interesting.
Mm.
Quite interesting. But there you go. That's about all the news and talk around the NRL for now. Oh, except one more bit that we talked about before. This whole CBA thing's just dragged on, and there's been lots of crap talk back and forth about, you know, who's wrong and who's right, and the players are greedy and this, that and the other, but they reckon they're going to table a deal of close to $1.3 billion to the players over a five-year period to try and get things done. So they're talking, I think I said to you before, of an increase next year of, I think, almost $2 million. I think the cap was about $12.5 million instead of $10.2. And the minimum wage was the big one that we've harped on about for a long time. That, you know, the top end are the one who keep receiving these upgrades. The minimum wage is going to go up to, it looks like, $125,000, which it should have never been.
Should have been anything, probably 10 less years ago.
Because that's the reason what we talk about. Every time someone goes, no depth or no on stage, well, they can't afford to. Because if you're getting 60 grand... Well, look
at
someone
like Kurt Falls. He's played first grade at the club that's just won two competitions in a row. And he can't even land a deal. So, like, he should be snapped up. He should be full-time player.
Yeah, and there's plenty of bad backup halves. Put it that way. Millions there's of plenty them. Of bad halves in general.
Yeah.
But, yeah, to think when people have asked that before, and I was asked by someone when I brought up about the country players get money and asked the question, that there's blokes that I've played with or know of that are out in country who get jobs and get 25, 30,000 a year just playing park footy. So when people are going, ah, they're all overpaid. Well, not everyone's overpaid. There's some guys that are training trials and developments with kids and families who have to pay rent and relocate every year who are getting 65 grand or 80 grand. That's not cutting it.
Yeah.
But you wonder why depth or guys leave or go to England and do these things early or bail to the country for jobs and these pay packets and a lower cost of living. This is the reason why. So this minimum wage needs to come in for that reason. If they're going to keep expanding, you need to know that guys that are on the fringe have a reason to stay or can stay and develop. And that hasn't been possible. So that's the one thing I take out of all this. All the other cap increases and guys getting megabucks, I really couldn't give a shit. about that side of things, because there's plenty of money at the top end. It's the guys from 25 to 30 in development being able to actually give them the opportunity to not have to have all those other stresses outside of football and actually give it a crack to play first grade or be a full-time footballer without all those other worries. So it doesn't say here yet what the development deal is. You asked me that before, and I guess in that circumstance, it's usually an 18-year-old kid or someone who's still at home, so it might be a little bit different, but I think the yeah, that's right. You can put an older guy on there and stash him, but the development deal, I think, was only at 60 to 65,000. I think that, if the other one's 125, surely that minimum has to come up to at least 80 to 90 to be, like, considered a, you know, a full-time job in the current financial environment. But, yeah, that'll be tabled. We'll see if that gets accepted, but it's almost a 20% increase on the salary cap in general over time. The NRLW, same deal. They got talking 350 grand up to 800,000. How that looks, squad size, not sure, but they're part of this sort of setup as well moving forward. They're also talking about a potential $300 million funding deal to the clubs. They've obviously been in for more money as well, so looks like it's going to be a fairly hefty upgrade and payday on all fronts.
Well, it looks that way.
So, see what happens. But yeah, there's been plenty of noise and a lot of people misquoted and things taken out of context and everyone attacking each other.
Welcome to rugby league.
So, yeah, quite interesting. But a lot of clubs have been holding off registering final deals that have got guys that have agreed to bring on board, but they've been waiting.
How the clubs don't know the salary cap at this time of the year is fucking...
And that's why a lot of them are ropeable and a lot of players are angry for the same reason, because there are some guys, same deal again, on the fringe who are waiting, who are training, who are uninsured, etc., if you're not contracted, who are like, I can't get a deal until this club knows exactly what they can pay me. And the clubs want to know as well, because if you lock them in, they just get that percentage of your salary cap. So they're, you know, wheeling and dealing and diamond for every dollar they can. They want to know exactly what the money is before they hand over a contract. So hopefully the madness is over and we can stop hearing, you know, things coming back and forth in both ways and talk about rebel leagues and breakout leagues and Abdo ignoring the clubs. Like, it's just, yeah, it's your standard NRL week to week. But more happy about that bottom end potentially getting what they deserve finally. So there you go. All done, Boxhead.
Beautiful.
Hopefully, fingers crossed, we get two cracker semi-finals and then we can have a great game of football to look forward to next week. Australia versus New Zealand, England versus Samoa. Who will be in the World Cup final? We'll find out very, very soon. Thank you to bluebet.com.au for those odds. Again, if you're going to have a bet with anybody, do it with the True Blue Bookie and those final numbers there. Australia, $1.35 to win the World Cup now. England into second spot ahead of New Zealand at $5.50. So if you're big on New Zealand, they were as short as $5 at one point there. They're back out to $8. Samoa, $13. I don't know if I'd be taking that market, but if you like New Zealand, $8. Price has sort of been re-upped on the flip side. And the other one, Penrith Solar Centre. Our man Jake, it's that time of year. There's no better time. Things going up. Invest in yourself. Invest in your house. Invest in getting the best results back from your power bills and trying to get into a credit instead of a debit. Tackle that rising power bill head on. There's no one better than the team at Penrith Solar Centre. Visit the website www.penrithsolar.com.au or call 1800 20 29 30 today to try and save yourself and your family some cashola. There you go. Anything else been going on in the life box here before we wrap up?
No.
No. Any suggestions? People usually like that sort of stuff. You got movies, TV?
I've been watching Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso? Yeah. I heard really good things. I do like it. It's Jason Sudeikis, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can recommend one that we watched the other day. It was pretty bloody grim, but I thought it was a brilliant movie. It was the remake of All Quiet on the Western Front.
It's dubbed
in English, but that's it's a German one, isn't it? They've made on from their perspective.
Yeah, it's Netflix.
So that was just debuted, I think, at Toronto Film Festival this year, on the German side of things. It's pretty bloody grim, if I'm being honest, but it was a really good movie.
It was good.
Thoroughly enjoyed it. And my one I'm going to throw out there, I'm well behind the ball here because I just, you know, it's one of those things growing up, you watch them and then I just didn't. I never watched the Daniel Craig James Bonds.
Yeah, you're an idiot.
And then, you know, I saw one the other night and then I was like, you know what, I might go from the start. So I've sort of been chipping away in 20, 30 minute blocks here or there between work and shifts and that. But I've watched three of them now. Javier Bardem in the third one. That guy is outstanding. No Country for Old Men. He was an absolute weirdo and he was outstanding. But as the bad man in that one, he is great.
Yeah.
Some of the quotes, last rat standing, when he pulls you, he's just a twisted human being.
Yep.
And when M's like bleeding, he's hugging her going, oh, what have they done to you? They've hurt you. He's an absolute creep and I love it. So I've got two to go. I've got Spectre and the one that was held off for bloody 2 years, No Time to Die. Have you watched both of them?
I've watched all of them.
Spectre, No Time to Die, good?
They're all good.
Because I'm a big fan of Rami Malek, so I was pretty excited when I saw that trailer. Yeah. But there you go. I've got two to go.
Yeah, but fair way behind the eight ball, mate.
Anything else other than Ted Lasso? You watched Dharma, didn't you? I didn't watch Dharma.
I watched Dharma.
I know a lot of people were big on that. It's not really my...
Oh, I watched the second season of Gangs of London.
Is that alright?
Yeah, it's gory. But that's right up my alley.
Trying to figure out. Yeah, well, clearly I said that year. I was like here for episode 5 or 6 of Dharma, I think, with you. And I was just almost tried to find it, whether I've got a problem with me or not. I almost found it comical, some of the stuff he come up with or his excuses to his grandma or anyone else. I was like, this is... I don't know whether to laugh or just be absolutely freaked out.
Bad man.
Bad man, all right. Dude's drinking at work.
We're watching The Walking Dead, Nicole and I, and that's got, I think, maybe 2 episodes until it finishes. It's fucking horrid. It's so bad.
Didn't you used to love that show?
Yeah, it was unreal. It got to its peak in about season six.
You were a Game of Thrones person. I was going to ask you that.
Smacked the fuck out of everyone with a baseball bat, cracked skulls, and then since then, it's just... nothing's happened.
What about the new Game of Thrones thing? I never got into Game of Thrones. Are you watching House of Dragon or whatever?
Yeah, it's finished. The first season's finished. The first season was good.
Yeah, but it is up to scratch with Game of Thrones?
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it.
Because I know you were a fan of that. I don't know.
Yeah, Game of Thrones was good.
I never got on board.
Yeah, because you like to live in your little box, mate. That's why.
Yeah, it's nothing about living in the box. Just saying, I just never got on board. Just did take
with things. That's okay. Never, just like with the Daniel Craig movies, you'll get there.
I'm enjoying the Bonds. They're good.
Just yeah, well, fucking welcome to, 2010.
Welcome to 2010.
When Daniel Craig was kicking ass as James Bond.
Well, you're wrong. It was like 06 or 07, the first one.
I think, so 5 maybe, yeah.
And then the last one was released last year. But, yeah, quite enjoyed them.
Yeah, all right. Slightly chipping away, I think.
What's that?
I don't think I've got anything else for you.
Well, there you go.
That's it.
Just like to throw
it out. I'm listening to a good podcast, actually.
Yeah, well, that's another one. Throw it out there.
Where is it? Oh, it's called The Trojan Horse Affair.
People like to listen about our lives, which surprises me. We're not
so the guy who did S-Town, I mentioned S-Town
S-Town a million times. You love S-Town.
So he's done a new one, which is called The Trojan Horse Affair. So just do yourself a little favour.
Trojan Horse Affair, what's it about?
It's about an Islamic plot to take over schools in Birmingham, London.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That sounds pretty heavy.
Well, yeah.
Ha! Heavy!
It's good.
Nice.
That's all.
Well, there you go.
I'm not watching any NFL. It's been a dog shit season of NFL. My Falcons play tomorrow. I don't even know whether I'll turn that on.
Well, I've basically watched none because it used to be my RDO that I got to watch, but I really haven't had one. So I've just been sort of looking at the scores or watching a mini here or there, but
watching some of it, it's like I want to cut my eyes out.
It's like, it's a bit like footy where things go in cycles, though. It's like everything was going passing and D-backs couldn't do anything, and now this year it's like running game, lockdown corners again. The game's just sort of flipped back the complete opposite way again.
Yeah.
So,
Not loving it.
Interesting. But there you go. That'll wrap us up. Fingers crossed, like I said, for 2 cracker games this weekend. Hopefully we can look forward to an awesome final in the
week. I'd take one good game. That'd be nice.
Yeah, well, even still, like you said, if Australia and New Zealand play one of their classics, that'd be great. Or if Samoa turn up to the party and give it to England and give us a good contest and a great game, that would be awesome as well. But just something, because as you've said, even the closer ones on the weekend, I didn't think were the greatest game. So
right.
Fingers crossed for a cracking contest and look towards things next week where we preview the final and have a bit of a chat about that and anything else that happens, and then we'll be winding down basically in the next week or two and have a bit of a break until we roll into 2023. But for now, Enjoy your week and enjoy your rugby league.
Bring it on. Give us more. Give us more. Where are you going? What's going on here? Is that it?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.